What's up, Tiago?
What's up, Johnny? Welcome to the wrap-up 2025, another episode of the Indie Founder Podcast. Today, here with my co-founder, João, but since it's super hard to say that, it's Johnny. So, Johnny Badoni, first question for you, starting right out of the bat, Pod Squeeze, are we selling it in 2026?
We are not selling in 2026. After a lot of thought and a lot of philosophical conversations about it, I think we decided not to sell it for one simple reason. Because even though we haven't met our expectations of reaching 1 million ARR, the fact is PodSqueeze is a very stable and reliable business in the sense that we are attracting a very stable amount of people to the website every month. The revenue is very stable. The net profit as well has been enough to cover our salaries in a very steady, predictable way. So I think currently it's a very important asset for our bootstrapping endeavors. So I think we are not selling it yet.
What Shall we give some numbers?
Yeah, go away.
Go away?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I thought you wanted me to go away.
Sorry, sometimes guys. I do.
We are not native. Mm-hmm. We have to be honest here. So
it reminds me a story of a pop singer. What's her name? Mikaela or something like that. And she entered a room and said, anybody else? And she wanted to say, is anybody here? And that sentence became very popular in Portugal and a reason for people to laugh about it.
Yeah, I can understand that it might cause some misunderstandings. Some numbers.
Yeah.
So PodSqueeze in the first year, and we are very open about it because we want to help the community, the indie founder community. First year, we went from 0 to 10K MRR.
Yes.
And that was actually in less than a year. So it was incredible. Second year, we went from 10K to 15K or... to be more precise, 1,500 and 1,000? 1,500? No.
15,200.
1,500, yes.
1,520. No, it's not 1,500. It's 1,500.
It's exactly. It's different.
It's different. It's 15,000.
15,200, exactly. 15, and then this year, we went from 15,200 to 15,600.
Yes.
So a growth of maybe 2%. So definitely we are in a very stagnant phase. We have tried everything. We've done a lot of experiments, but it looks like PodSqueeze is a lifestyle business. It's not a VC business. It's not one of those businesses that makes all the investors excited, but it's a nice business. One really cool thing that we did this year was reducing our net churn. I was just checking and it went down 30%, I believe. So that's incredible. A few things that we have done that I believe that really helped, by the way. I think that's also important to share. First thing was increasing the prices of our higher tiers. We decided that, okay, we have the people that are going to just try PodSqueeze, and for them we have a very low price tier that doesn't have all the functionalities, and then we have the pro tier and the agency tier, and those we increase the prices. So the idea was that these people are the ones actually sustaining the business. Plus another thing that we did that was, I think, really cool was implementing the rollover minutes. So the minutes that are not used in 1 month roll over to the next month and they accumulate. And if you cancel, you lose all of this accumulation. So I think these two things really made a difference and reduced our net churn to 7% or 7.2%, which is, I believe, really good, especially if we compare it with Stripe's benchmark. They say that we are already above average in terms of churn. So there was a success. What do you think?
Yes, that was a success, I guess. What I would really love to see is the translation of that into an increase in MRR. So maybe that's going to happen in 2026. what I think we have been observing in the last year or so is that it's an incredibly frustrating thing for any entrepreneur and for especially for a bootstrapper, which is when we make an indicator better, like churn or whatever, there seems to be something that compensates the improvement and just makes the MRR completely stable. So that's something that's very frustrating and makes you think that you are not going in any positive direction. But the truth is, at the same time, we have seen a lot of our competitors die. So even though our MRR has not been increasing the way we wanted, and even though we achieved those small wins, the truth is PodSqueez is still in the game and a lot of our competitors, similar yeah. tools have died. So I think that's probably a better indicator right now than watching the MRR grow. But hopefully we will see the decrease in churn translating in a higher MRR.
Yeah.
I guess these things take a few months to reveal themselves in the revenue.
Now, going back to the initial question, if it's time to sell, you said immediately no. I just want to say that I did a brainstorm with ChatGPT. ChatGPT has been, I guess, another co-founder, helping us with all these decisions. And one thing that it said was that the metrics sound very still good, even though it's not a growth, it's not growing a lot. It's a lifestyle business, as I said. And that we should not sell, but we should implement certain selling triggers. So with this, I mean certain thresholds that if we pass these thresholds, we should think on selling. And the suggestions were if the MRR goes down by $1,000, $2,000 consistently throughout 3-4 months, if we think that there is something in the near future or in the future that will devalue PodSqueez, or if we see churn going up, this kind of thing. So I guess that's the strategy for 2026. We'll still keep developing PodSqueez. We are still going to work together with our lovely customers and develop new features. It's more in a maintenance mode, and we'll keep an eye towards all of those little triggers in case that we surpass those thresholds we decide to sell.
Yeah, but as we were talking the other day, that in a way makes sense because you decide to sell when you finally reach a point where you think, okay, I cannot do anything to improve the current state of the business. So let's pass the ball to another person who might have more resources to do it. But at the same time, it's a little bit counterintuitive to sell an asset when it's on its lowest. So what do you think of that? Why would you sell an asset like PodSqueez when it's dropping in MRR?
It's a great question. It's a question that I also asked GPT again. I think you are thinking about these VC startups and VC businesses. There, yes, you want to show growth.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that they normally do is they invest tons of money into that business to make it grow so that the metrics all look very shiny, even mm-hmm. though the business might have a huge churn, for instance. We have a friend of ours from India. He works in Abhopper, which is also a podcasting hosting. And he said something that I think is really interesting, that the VC game is like having a chicken. And you want to fatten this chicken and you give all the steroids so that the chicken looks really big and yummy. But in the end, it's only steroids and nothing and it's tasteless. So I think that's kind of how I think it's a great metaphor to compare to the VC world. I believe that people in the VC world might not agree with this 100%. But we are not in that business. We are a lifestyle business. So even if we sell this now, what GPT told me is that we are not going to sell using our ARR. We are going to sell using our EBITDA, which is basically our ARR minus our expenses.
Mm-hmm.
A great thing about PodSqueez is that it's very profitable. It requires maybe 10 to 15 hours per week from our work. Besides that, it's very sustainable. And we have around 70% profitability. So I think what people are looking for when they are buying such a business is not the potential of growth, is the potential of this will bring me money for the next X month.
Yeah, it's more like a real estate investment where it just gives you a rent every month.
Exactly. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. like giving you dividends. So even if now PodSqueeze starts slowing down and decreasing the MRR a slight bit, it does not mean that it will die right away, right? Mm-hmm. So it might still mean that it will last for years. Mm-hmm. So it's still interesting for people to buy. Plus, they might think that they can resuscitate the business. And one very huge, big asset of PodSqueeze is our domain authority.
Mm-hmm.
The more time we spend with PodSqueeze, the more it grows on Google, the more the DR grows. And another thing that GPT told me is that if in 1 year we are able to still sustain this MRR, even if we don't grow or just grow 1%, 2%, mm-hmm. this will bring more value to the business because it gives predictability.
Yeah.
And that's what people want when they're buying this SaaS. They mm-hmm. they want predictability, not necessarily a huge growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. So I guess 2026 won't be the year we are going to sell PodSqueeze, perhaps in 2027.
Yeah, if everything goes well. We will not sell PodSqueeze. Another thing that we did this year with PodSqueeze is getting into the B2B game, like the enterprise game.
Yeah.
PodSqueeze before, we were acquiring customers using SEO mostly. We did a lot of things, but mostly SEO. It's kind of a B2C, B to small B business. And we thought, okay, let's get into those agencies that manage 40, 50 podcasts. So, do you want to tell the story, what we were able to achieve? What were the conclusions?
Yeah, I mean, the reason we tried B2B was because the B2C was kind of stagnating on Google, which was our main source of new users. So our reason was, okay, let's try to unlock a new distribution channel that might even allow us to increase the baskets. So it was, I think it was a strategy of unlocking a new distribution channel. And so we tried in Portugal. We talked with all the radios and televisions and all the media companies here. And we were quite successful in selling PodSqueeze to those clients. The real problem was that the baskets were still very low because it seems that the usage these companies have for PodSqueeze is still quite low. It seems that there's not a real enterprise client for PodSqueeze.
Do you think it's that the usage is low or that our pricing is not scalable? Because if you think about it, it's not super low, right? Like they're using 2,000, 3,000 minutes per month. So they are converting 40, 50 episodes per month. But I wouldn't say that is low.
I mean, compared with what? So, I mean, it's not...
What would you expect? Would you expect...
The thing is, we have a B2C plan, like the Pro plan, which offers like 300 minutes. And these companies are using, what, like 5, 6, 7 the amount of the Pro plan.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not a really...
Some of them are using almost 10 times the Pro plan.
10 times the Pro plan.
Maybe not yet. You're right. 7, 8. Yeah. But that's quite big, no?
I'm not really sure from an enterprise. So I guess it's a lot bigger. It's an agency level, but it wasn't like media company level as we were expecting.
Right.
For the amount of content that these companies produce, like shows every day, dozens of podcasts. So the problem seemed to be that we did not find a real enterprise client. And what's interesting is that we have a competitor called Cast Magic, and they did something that was quite revealing because they probably went through the same difficulties when selling to B2B, which was they started to offer an unlimited plan.
Yeah.
For $600 or something like that to justify the price instead of capping the amount of minutes that you offered in this plan. You just say, okay, you have unlimited minutes, but you are going to pay a lot more.
Yeah.
And they did this because they also figured out that there are no enterprise.
Yeah, we tried a lot of things. We tried, or we thought on just increasing the pricing. We have now an enterprise level without the price. And we thought on also charging per podcast. But we in the beginning of this year we were working from a co-work, and there was another VC company also with AI, mm-hmm. AI the Get Vocals.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because they do only B2B, enterprise B2B. And one thing that they told us that I found extremely interesting is that they say, never put your price on your website.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you have a call and you always shoot for the moon. So you're talking with this potential client and they ask, you're showing them what you're able to do, and you sell them the heaven on earth. And then eventually they ask you for the price and you say 10,000, and then you see their reaction.
Mm-hmm.
They say, "Whoa, 10,000 is too much. Okay, let's reduce a bit. What about I can do 7,000 for the first year for you, just for you?" And then you try to upsell. So that's their goal. And depending on the client, they would negotiate different prices, even if the service they're offering is the same. And this happens, I think, in all B2B. Even you are a designer and you charge me $50 for a logo, and maybe for a big company, you charge them much more, right? So that's kind of the things what I've learned this year. Yeah. About the B2B is that B2B means not having a fixed price, means that you need to negotiate and evaluate your client. And of course, that a bigger client will also take more of your time and your resources. So it makes sense. And as well, that it takes a long time to close these deals. So for us, for the Portuguese deals, it took us from 4 to 6 months to close one deal, with recurring emails and talking with finances and doing all this process. So you cannot charge the same that you're charging for a client that you got through SEO. It needs to be more. Now, the question is, how are you able to have both? How can you have the B2B with your self-check, the B2C with your self-checkout page, and the B2B? And that's something that we are still figuring out, and I'm not sure if I have the final solution. I don't know if you want to.
Yeah, the reason is because even these B2Bs, they can go to our website, see the pricing and see how much the minute costs.
Exactly.
What's the price per minute?
And that happened. Let me just tell them this story.
Mm-hmm.
We had one client from the UAE, the Arabic world, and they told us, "Hey, we want to use your tool. We want to use, I don't remember now, but like 2,000, 3,000 minutes. We are an enterprise. We do this and that. What would be the price?"
Mm-hmm.
And I told Joel, "Okay, let's really try to bump up the prices. These guys, they probably have money. They are in the millionaires or billionaire real estate, so they have money."
Yeah.
So I think I gave 3 times or 4 times the price that we have on the pro. And the first thing, and I told Joel, "Man, this will work." And you're a bit skeptic about it. And then we got an email from them saying, "Hey, can you justify the prices? Why is it so much more expensive than just buying the agency lights that I can buy through your checkout process?
Why is it the price per minute so much higher in the enterprise plan?"
Yeah.
Because I think people would have the intuition that by buying the enterprise, the price per minute would be lower.
Yeah.
And that's normally what happens. For example, with our transcription provider, we actually have special prices because we buy in bulk. So I guess that's the intuition. But at the same time, you have a lot more work with these B2B clients and you want to make more money with these B2B yeah. clients. So how do you justify them this increase in price? You have to come up with, okay, special support. We are going to implement features.
That's what I did,
yeah. But that's interesting you mentioned that, because there's the theory and then there's what actually happens in the actual world. So this price anchoring strategy you were mentioning that these guys were doing, these Get Vocal guys were doing, where they shoot a huge price and then they start to negotiate. So that's the famous price anchoring strategy I've seen people talk about is everywhere. But then there's the actual world where you are going to these clients and you shoot these huge prices and they just churn, they just yeah. disappear. So that's, and I think there's a lot of bullshit in our area in business, and most of the advice and most of these kind of theories, they might work for some businesses, but they don't work for others. But my experience is that most of the times, this kind of advice is not replicable in the businesses that you are trying to implement it. So we have to take this advice with always a grain of salt and know that what works for some guys doesn't work for others. And also we had another challenge, which was, it seems that most media companies right now are going through a very dark phase where they are trying to compete with TikTok and YouTube and other giants, Netflix and all that stuff. And so our potential B2B, our enterprise clients, they seem to be all going bankrupt or fighting to stay alive. So they did not have a lot of funds to invest in PodSqueeze. So for example, we talk with a huge network here in Portugal. And after we ask them, like, I don't know, 1,000 euros a year or something like that, they still try to negotiate down the price. So in these conditions, it's super, super hard to do B2B. And it's still something that for us, it's a mystery, because we see, for example, these guys, these Get Vocal guys, they can charge thousands of dollars per month. And of course, when you are charging thousands of dollars per month, you can reach 1 million ARR much easier, much faster. But our experience is that when you present these kind of prices to these enterprise companies, even if they are like top media companies in the world, they always look at our proposal with a grain of salt, right? It seems that there's an expectation that's not really met.
Yeah, it's not easy. I think it's not easy. And when they tell you do B2B because you'll make a lot more money, I don't think it's that straightforward. That's for sure. But yeah, I think that concludes the wrap up of PodSqueeze. I don't know if you want to say anything else.
No, I don't think so. So we went through the B2B. The B2C has been quite stable. Our MRR has been quite stable, growing a little bit. So just a overall recap. For now, we are not going to sell PodSqueeze.
And we're still maintaining it. I think it's important to say, if there are PodSqueeze customers watching this,
we are still maintaining it
and developing it, and we are still very passionate about it, right? So
yeah.
The passion and the business sometimes don't go hand to hand, right? Like, you can be very passionate about something and that doesn't deliver the growth you want. But I still think it's a great tool, and we are still developing, and we are still going to focus a lot. I don't know if it's a lot of our time, but definitely maybe half of my time will still be on PodSqueeze, that's for sure.
Actually, the fact that the passion and the business don't always match, it's not that they don't always match. I think that they rarely match.
The coffee machine is doing the noise. We have a new coffee machine. We are in a new office. So if you're listening to this, you probably...
We have a very unpredictable coffee machine that sometimes just decides to make noises.
But go on.
Okay, this is the bootstrap way.
Yes.
This is how you record a podcast bootstrapped. So what was I talking about? The mismatch between passions and business. And this is actually, we have been talking about this because we went from being passionate entrepreneurs to being still passionate entrepreneurs, but more like lab entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And entrepreneurship for us now, it's more like doing math than more than chasing, you know, our passions. And this is the reason why
you're doing the bridge for the next topic.
Exactly.
And the next topic is, and I want to announce it with a big title. We bought a domain for $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
So just for people that don't know, normally a domain costs maybe $10 a year. We bought it for $1,500. So that was the biggest purchase of domains for both of us, for sure, by far. Now, the question is,
why did we do it?
Why did we do it?
So first of all, spending 1,500 as a bootstrapper is not an easy decision, because we are cutting our salaries. But the reason we did it was...
Especially because we don't have such high MRR, right? I guess if we were making Peter levels MRR, or that would be easier. Mm-hmm. But for us, it makes a dent. It means that we are going to take a lower salary that month, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So less Christmas presents for our families. Yes. But it is what it is. So the reason we bought the domain was because we noticed something very interesting on Google, which was websites that had the keyword, the main keyword for their buying intent in their URL, in their main domain, had a huge advantage on Google ranking. So for example, when we started working on PodSqueeze, we were ranking for show notes generator for for like 1 year. And PodSqueeze was doing really well until there was a website that showed up called shownotesgenerator.com.
Podcast show notes
generator. Podcast show notes generator.com. And suddenly this website just got ahead of us, even with a much lower DR, because the main domain matched the query, the keyword.
And this is, by the way, if you are now zoning out a little bit, it's maybe time to zone back in, because I think this is very important. So when you're searching for something on Google, Google does not know if you're searching for those keywords or if you're searching for the domain, right? So another example is...
There's a lot of examples. The thing is, this is not an anecdotal.
It's not a what?
An anecdotal.
Anecdotal.
Anecdote. Anecdote.
Not an anecdote.
Anecdote.
Yeah, okay.
There
are many examples.
There are many examples. We kept seeing things like this. For example, Carolina, your wife was searching for Nano Banana, a Google Gemini feature to generate images. And she
just want to say that she was actually looking because she wanted to get an algorithm, like the Google algorithm, nothing related to the actual like meaning of a nano banana.
Okay.
I just want to clarify this.
Because she didn't have to search for it. Let's be honest, yeah. Anyway, so she was searching for nano banana.
It's a weird name.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of landing on Google, on the Google website, she landed on a nanobanana.com, which was not affiliated with Google. This website, nanobanana.com, was actually ranking above the Google AI tool suite, which included nanobanana. And we have other examples. For example, we have also, it's not quite a competitor, Whisper Transcribe, which is a tool that transcribes all sorts of podcasts and such, and videos and such. And these guys are doing a much higher MRR than we are because they are ranking super high when people search for Whisper Transcribe. So people are looking for the Whisper from OpenAI and they land on their website because their website is called whispertranscribe.com. Yeah.
But you know something funny?
Tell me.
Lohan from the Whisper Transcribe just messaged me congratulating us for our low churn.
Okay.
Because they also have a higher churn. But I guess it makes sense because they also have a lot more customers coming in. Yeah, so we decided to test this out. We first bought the domain Video Quality and Answer, which is a keyword if you search on the Google keyword tool, it gives you from 100,000 to 1 million searches per month. So it's huge. So we are very excited about this one. And then we bought audioandanswer.com. That's the domain that costed $1,500. And because it's a keyword with a lot of searches and low competition, it's a keyword that we are already ranking on PodSqueeze. So we're already making money with this keyword.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, another mistake we have done. I think it was still this year. So at first we were ranking for this keyword on Google, but we had a lot of traffic coming to PodSqueeze throughout this keyword, but we realized that these people they don't even have podcasts most of the time. They just have like little shorts and videos. So we did this, which was we actually killed these landing pages. We decided to wait. Why are we bringing this traffic? They are creating their accounts. They are using PodSqueeze. They are not our user. They are spending our money. Let's kill these landing pages. And after a while, we thought, man, why are we doing this? Let's make money with this. Let's create a little tool that just does the audio enhancement. And now we are making money out of this.
Yeah. So this was actually our finding to make us look more into this kind of strategy.
Yeah.
So we were getting people into these landing pages, as you were mentioning, we were getting a lot of traffic from India and Pakistan and other countries that do not convert as much. But also, it wasn't just that these countries were not converting that. It wasn't because they came from countries that do not convert as much. It was because also the intent was not very aligned with PodSqueeze, because PodSqueeze was a tool. All the copy of the PodSqueeze website was directed to podcasters, and these people were just looking for an audio and answer. So they would land on these landing pages, they would sign up, but then they would be presented with an onboarding for a tool that is for podcasters, that does clips and all that stuff. And so we noticed that these people were creating all these accounts, but they were not using the tool, and that's why we decided to kill the landing pages. So our insight was, okay, let's try to create a very easy-to-use tool that did not require an account sign-up, where these guys would just upload their audio and would get their audio and enhancement. And so then we noticed, okay, so this kind of buying intent has some conversion. Then we started to have our first clients. And this was why we decided to buy ultimately the domain to build a SaaS specifically for these people.
It's still not making money, just a few bucks. The question for you, since you are the SEO guy here of the team, is 2026, what is the recipe that we are going to follow to try to convert these two assets, the video quality enhancer and audioanswer.com, into cash cows?
What's the strategy in terms of growing these websites on
Google? Yeah, I want to maybe even like for the listeners to give them very specific step-by-step what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Maybe not in super detail, but so that they can also try and then... Yeah.
Well, first of all, the audioanswer.com is like 1 year, one week old or something like that. So it's very recent. But the video quality enhancer, we bought it like 1 month ago, or it's a little bit older. And it's already getting a lot of clicks and traffic, which surprised me for
some
such
clicks.
Some clicks. It's not, of course, it's not huge. It's a 1 month old website. But
I think it's getting what?
20 clicks, 20 clicks a day.
Yeah, 20 clicks.
It grew recently in the last 5 days.
And the audio enhancer as well, already. Even the audio enhancer is already getting some clicks.
So it's surprising to me that such a new website is already getting traction on Google just because we created like five or six landing pages with video enhancement keywords. But what's interesting to see is that the keyword that's right now attracting the most clicks is video quality enhancer, which is the keyword that's on the main domain. So to grow these websites, what we are going to do is the same strategy that we did for PodSqueeze. So creating content clusters. I have already did the keyword research. Articles about video enhancement, how to enhance video with traditional software, with AI, et cetera, et cetera. So fill the website with rich keywords about video quality enhancement. So to inform Google that we are an authority in this niche, then link internally these articles, create pillar articles, create landing pages trying to find all the variations. So for example, one thing that you can do, so for example, you are selling a video quality enhancer, but you can create landing pages for like sibling keywords, for example, video upscaler or 4K video upscaler. There's a ton of very relevant keywords that are very similar to video quality enhancer that you can create landing pages for. And so you will also try to rank for these keywords. Mm. And of course, the strategy of getting backlinks.
And how do we get backlinks? Are we going to use Rank Chase, our own tool?
Yeah, so first of all, you can use Rank Chase, absolutely. But we now have also a new, very good asset to get us backlinks to our new website, which is PodSqueeze, because PodSqueeze now has a DR of 50-something, 55 or 54. And now it's much easier to convince people to exchange backlinks with us because we can give them a backlink from PodSqueeze and they will point to video quality and answer. And we have already a list of contacts that we can reach out to. And that's how we are mostly building backlinks. And also, a very important tip, we also find out something really cool last year, which was the press releases.
Yeah.
So one thing that you can do, you can go through all the press releases in your niche. And this works surprisingly well. You can go to, for example, if you have a marketing website, a marketing tool, you can go through all the websites that have news about marketing and all that stuff, or about tools, digital tools and all that stuff.
I think it's one mistake that we did in the past was that when we were thinking about press releases, we'd send them to like TechCrunch and big tech blogs, and they would just basically ignore us. And the lesson is you need to go very niche. So we started going to specifically for PodSqueeze for newsletters around podcasting, because these people, they make money with their newsletters, and they are always looking for something new to share, right? They have sometimes Pod News, for instance, is daily. Mm-hmm. Others is like thrice a week. So going very specific for these very niche newsletters and doing the press release for them, we had very good results. So we would do a press release, share with maybe 10, 15 newsletters, and maybe have like a 50% success rate or even more, no?
In the beginning we sent like 10 press releases, and we ended up having like five websites and platforms that ended up publishing our press releases every time very consistently. So just a practical note, the way to do a press release, you just create a Word doc. You write down what your tool is about, or if you are launching a new feature, you describe what you are building. You can put a little bit of heart in it. You can talk about yourself, about what your users can do with your new feature, or your feature is special. And you create a PDF with maybe one or two images, and you just send them to these blogs, platforms, newsletters. Because these guys really need new, fresh information. And if your tool is nice, if you write down a nice press release, there's a big chance they are going to just publish with a backlink.
Third topic of this conversation, and probably the last one, is AI going to kill SaaS and entrepreneurs?
Last year happened something very interesting for me, which was I built a full SaaS using only AI, using only Cursor. I vibe coded it from the back end to the front end without writing a single line of code. This was hunchmachine.com. I built the backend with NA10, which is also something you should talk about. Very useful for bootstrappers. But at the same time, so this kind of gave me hope, because I really wanted to be able to have this autonomy to build also the product, but also show me that we are going to get a tsunami of new apps, new software. People can now build their tools. Maybe it's easier to build your own tool than subscribe to a new one if it's a simple thing.
Yeah, with NA10. So for, I guess most people know, NA10 is a tool for automation similar to Make or Zapier. And now they have these agent nodes where you can, it's use the MCP protocol, I believe. You have an agent node, you connect a bunch of tools, and then you just describe what you want it to do. And it will just use the tools and use the database based on the indications you gave it. It's like training your own junior employee. And I have replaced SaaS recently. I have replaced the customer support. We're actually using a SaaS for this. And now with just this, I'm basically able to manage all the customer support for all our products using NA10 and AI.
I don't think people are giving it attention enough. I think I've seen you post about it on your LinkedIn. Unfortunately, they don't get the same attention as your political posts. But it's very, I think people should really pay attention to this, because we are replacing people we were actually paying for, freelancers with simple automations that we can just drag and drop in NA10.
So what does this mean? Does this mean that people, because sometimes I'm afraid of this, that they can just replace PodSqueeze easily with NA10 and a few tools, right? So what is the future of SaaS? Are we in danger of losing for all of, are companies going to start just making their own software because it's so much easier?
Yeah, that's a good question. I cannot answer that. What's your opinion?
My opinion is that we should focus on integrations with these tools.
Mm-hmm.
And we also done this. I've created more content around how to connect PodSqueeze with N810 and these kind of tools. I think we should embrace the MCP protocol. We should embrace creating apps and APIs. A lot of our tools now have APIs. And I think this is also great because the automation niche is quite big. A lot of people are excited about this, but I think we need to do this. And recently, OpenAI also released their store and their connections where you can now book through Booking or Google. I don't know if Google Flights is there, but you can just describe it what you wanted to do, and then these agents will do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to do these integrations. I think that's very, very important. And I think there's still space, especially for big enterprises. They don't want to maintain it. They don't want to maintain their own software. And it will take a while. Eventually, I think it will be a commodity. Eventually, I think if you have it will be normal education, right? I don't think it makes sense for accountants to be manually going through all the invoices or people that manage suppliers, they having an Excel sheet. I think they will learn how to use these tools. It will be very accessible, but it will take some time. So yes, SaaS are in danger. Not sure if they will die, but it will change. And in the next five years, I think people should be very aware of
that. Yeah. What I think is going to happen is, for bootstrappers had the advantage of being agile and being creative. And for example, PodSqueeze actually, one of the reasons I think PodSqueeze got successful, it was because it was a creative idea that went out in the right timing. Perhaps a much bigger company would take a lot more time to build something like PodSqueeze. And so this little advantage that bootstrappers had, which was building creative, original products in the right timing, will cease to exist, basically, because there will be so much competition, so much new products, new ideas in the market, everyone trying to build the next cool idea in the right timing. Everyone will be able to build this so easily that advantage of building interesting, creative products will cease to exist for bootstrappers. And this will make even more important distribution. And for bootstrappers, if you want to succeed, it won't be with these cool products, will be with products that have good distribution channels. And this won't be very, very good for bootstrappers because it costs a lot of money and a lot of resources to build distribution channels.
Yeah.
So it may,
and time.
And time. And so it will make the gap between the bootstrappers and VC companies much, much bigger in terms of being able to achieve success.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one key phrase that we have been saying a lot, sentence, is distribution is key. And that's a lot of our focus. I think for 2026 will also be our focus. Use whatever we already have. So we have PodSqueeze, we have a newsletter, we have SEO, a good DR for PodSqueeze. We have our social networks. We also have now a chain of multiple websites with the DR growing that we can use to point to each other. And hopefully we also learn how to better use social media to create a powerful network of distribution. Because, yeah, absolutely, I agree. This is the most important thing. Is to be the one controlling that, because everyone will be able to replicate whatever tool you're doing. So if you are able to distribute it better than the others, you'll win.
Yeah, so there was a motto for bootstrappers, which was ship fast. And this is something that Peter Levels says a lot. The reason you want to ship fast is you want to iterate very fast and see what product sticks and what doesn't. But in a world where there's so much apps, so much software, so much SaaS, Shipping Fest is probably not going to be the edge here because there's so much competition. What will probably end up happening is you are just going to ship trash that people will not consume. People do not have the attention to give to your products. There's so much shit in the internet. So this is actually the reason why we stopped, I think, from just shipping products to doing this strategy of buying domains and focusing more on the distribution than on the ShipFest thing. Because Peter Levels, you were talking about Peter Levels. Peter Levels says a lot of times that I think this is the pinned tweet that he has there, which is I shipped like 75 products and only 5 worked. But I think the reason these products work for Peter Levels is we've had this conversation before, is because he has a huge distribution. And so even though he kind of, that might be true, if you ship more and if you pivot more, if you iterate more, you might find the winning product. The key is to be successful in Twitter like Peter Levels. If you are, then your products will work.
And even if he says that the product failed monetarily, it was a great source of content. It was a great source to entertain the audience and to gain more followers for 1 or 2 months, right?
Yeah.
So, I totally agree. And a lot of indie makers out there, especially on Twitter, they have a lot of success as well because they are great entrepreneurs, but as well because they have a big audience. And I think even for SEO, when everyone is talking about your product, Google knows it. So I think that's also important. Even if a lot of their traffic comes from SEO, it can also be because a lot of people were searching for their domain.
Yeah. I think there's a bootstrappers and entrepreneurs are always in this state of confusion because you are always trying to build new products and they seem to be good and people do not react as you expect and you don't have the visitors to your website as you wanted. But the truth is, most of, at least it has been our experience, most of the products that we launch, they seem to have a very predictable conversion rate. So it seems that the problem is not building the specific product that people want. Because normally when you build a product that solves a problem, we have seen the conversion rate ranging between 1 to 3%. The real difficulty and the reason why we don't make money with these products is not because the conversion rate is low. It's not because the product lacks features. It's because we cannot bring people to the website.
Yeah.
If you fix that single thing, you'll start to make money.
Yeah.
And people get lost in all these variables and all this stuff when normally the key is really distribution. Yeah. So.
And this has always been the case, right? Like, it's nothing new.
But it will probably get worse with
it's the... It's getting worse.
Yes.
It's getting more important, that's for sure. Okay, let's get to our final notes. And here I will ask you to quickly go through one or two of the biggest learnings or lessons for or things that you discover in 2025. And what are your predictions for 2026? And I can start. So, for sure, I think the biggest... But the most interesting thing I've learned in 2025, we shared already a lot of lessons, but specifically the tool is N810 and automation. Mm-hmm. I think at first when agents first appeared and everyone was talking about agents, I kind of dismissed it. But now I look at it and I'm blown away, especially for bootstrappers. I think that we are able now to create our junior employees. N810 plus this agent node is replacing what used to be people that worked for us. We had people that worked for us and we pay them every month. And now I can have very similar results using N810 and automations. I basically treat it as employees. Every day every week, I review their work. I give some notes on their prompts so that they can optimize based on what I think they can optimize. And that's incredible. So. That's something that I will still continue using in the future. And in terms of predictions for 2026, I think, as you can see, our strategy is more facing this distribution, is more facing this kind of SEO techniques and tips and tricks. I believe in terms of AI that things will decelerate a little bit. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I feel that now the iteration of even of OpenAI, even though they are still incredible, they are not, the gap is not as big as in the beginning. So I think this is actually good because there's so many potential that now we can use and we can learn and we can catch up. I think it will be a year of automating a lot of processes, catching up, but I don't think there will be a huge increase on. I don't think we'll reach a singularity or anything like that. And this might be good or bad as well. This can also be bad if we are in the bubble, in the AI bubble. It can be, it's something that kind of concerns me that we are getting to a point where if AI doesn't grow, there was such an investment to it that the bubble can burst and it can also be bad. So it's a matter of always being very attentive and adapting fast. But yeah, you already know our strategy. And that's kind of what I hope to that will happen in 2026 is, and the goal is double our MRR, not with PodSqueeze necessarily, with all our scope of products, but hopefully this will be the year where all of our efforts and lessons will start piling up, creating this snowball effect, and we'll see a very decent growth. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have a lot more to say. Just one thing that I would like for 2026 is just to cut the confusion, cut down on all the things that we have been working that do not seem to work. So cut down the 80% of work that doesn't produce any results and focus on the 20% that does. And that seems to be work towards distribution. So all of those things that we spend working on, like features, and all that stuff that doesn't necessarily bring results, specific, you know, results that you can actually measure. I think we should put that aside and focus on distribution. So 2026 will be the year to test these very specific SEO strategies. Because, again, even for distribution, you need to find for the bootstrappers out there, I know that you hear a lot of tips like for creating video clips for social media. Sometimes you chase virality and all that stuff, but you really need to focus on things that you can do that work for your personality. I know that you have the theory that you need to be good at doing everything as an entrepreneur, and I agree in part, but at the same time, people are naturals for certain things. And for us, SEO has been the most steady strategy that better aligns with our skills. So that's what I want to focus on, and distribution on SEO, and really test these theories through with the audio and answer and the video quality and answer.
Amazing. And that's the end of this conversation. I hope it was interesting for you. If you have any questions or feedback, feel free to shoot me a message at WBTiago on Twitter or LinkedIn. The links will be in the show notes of this episode. And as you can see, we have a new scenario. We have our own office now. So hopefully the strategy for the Indie Founder podcast in 2026 is to have more people coming here, having more interviews. Maybe Peter Levels will finally agree to do the second interview here in the podcast and sit here where João is. And yeah, thank you for listening. I wish you an incredible start of the year, and see you next time. And thank you, João.
Tiago.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.